Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Next, the entire USA, we got you. Find out more about the tires that are on the 2021 Jeep Talk Show Gladiator, the Nexen Rodian MTX at nexentireusa.com.
You're listening to a 4x4 Radio Network podcast.
Are you ready?
It's the Jeep Talk Show. With Wendy.
There will be body damage.
Chuck.
I like making people laugh. It's good for my soul.
Josh.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And Joey.
I think that's a huge deal.
So sit back, strap in, and brace yourself.
Oh, yeah. It's good to be here. It's good to be back. I'm so glad that we all didn't die over the weekend. I had it on good authority that things were going to change, whether it was going to be dead people everywhere or maybe just no power from an EMP attack. Maybe it's delayed. Maybe it's still going to happen. I know. More cheery news from the Jeep Talk Show here in a minute. So let me ask you something. Are you new to the Roundtable? The Roundtable is a Zoom meeting with listeners like you. We're here to discuss various topics. Sometimes we have a guest question and answer session, and you never know who you're going to meet in the Zoom meeting or which guest we're going to have on the show. To join the Zoom meeting, sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a weekly reminder and how to join us on the Tuesday 8 p.m. Central Time recording. Just go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact and scroll on down through there, and you'll see how to sign up for the newsletter. All right. Well, let's see. Do I have a drum roll on here? I don't think I do. How about a rim shot? Doesn't work. But anyway, for the first time ever, we're going to do a giveaway on the Roundtable episode. It's a big one, folks. We've done it before, but this one is extra special. If you sign up to the Jeep Talk Show newsletter, you know what I'm talking about. So let's move along here and get this thing out there so you can win this really, really quickly. Nexen Tire launches the all-new Rodian ATX all-terrain tire, pushing all-terrain performance to a new level. Nexen's new all-terrain tire features top-tier presentation and construction using the latest materials advancements designed specifically for wet or dry grip. Rodian MTX makes use of next-generation tread technology specifically designed to promote better grip during the wear process. The new tire achieves this thanks to sidewall lugs and deep grooves for improved handling and composure on and off-road. Compared to the company's earlier all-terrain offerings, Rodian ATX boasts increased performance in four of the most important categories to consumers: durability, wet traction, snow traction, and mileage. That's interesting because I've never heard Nexen talk about mileage before. Rodian ATX also features a reinforced three-ply sidewall construction that on most LT sizes, enabling an industry-best all-terrain tire design for longer life and increased durability under heavy loads and higher pressures. Moreover, increased sidewall rigidity also enhances the vehicle stability while cornering and under load and under heavy towing scenarios. Specifications on the all-new Rodian ATX all-terrain tire include reinforced three-ply construction on most LT sizes, emerging 3D snipes increasing the tread-to-road contact for improved traction in snow, mud, and wet conditions. Boy, this one's interesting. 3PM SF certified, severe winter certification to withstand heavy snow, ice, and tough terrain. Available in 63 sizes. Sizes range from a 15-inch to a 22-inch tire. Speed rating STNH available. Top-tier tread warranty. So going along with the 63 sizes that are available on ATX, you're going to need to be caller number 63, and you're going to have a choice of the Nexen Rodian ATX new all-terrain tire or the featured favorite Rodian MTX Extreme Mud Terrain. So this doesn't, don't think you're not going to be able to get the mud terrain if that's what you were wanting, but you're going to be able to pick one or the other if you are the giveaway winner. So caller number 63, the phrase that pays, ATX is the way to go.
You must be 18 years of age or older. Your mailing address must be in the continental United States. You may only call in once per giveaway. Any required word or phrase must be said exactly and completely the first time. Your call must include your caller ID. One chance to win per individual per giveaway. All these rules must be followed unless otherwise stated. Failure to follow these rules will disqualify you from being eligible for the giveaway. We will contact you with a text message at the number you called from. Good luck, Jeeper.
All right, so we now join the Zoom meeting, which is already in progress. Please keep in mind that what you're about to hear is completely unrehearsed. The opinions may be strong and may or may not reflect the opinion of the Jeep Talk Show, but probably does. All right, Zoom people, don't forget to, when you first speak, please give me your name and your general location. So what do you guys think about this announcement with the Nexon all-terrain tire, the ATX?
You misspoke. When you announce the caller number and the phrase, you're going to have to repeat that.
People are thinking, hey, what? This isn't fair. The Zoom people, they get to know this before I do. No, they didn't. I got it in the show notes here. I muted the audio. See, I know what I'm doing here.
We all had our phones ready.
Steve was trying to read your lips. We still noticed you buried your face behind there.
Oh, I kind of do that by default. I like to get right in front of the microphone and speak. It's not very good for video. So let me ask you guys, do any of you guys run ATXs on your Jeeps?
Yes.
I should say all terrains, not ATXs, but all terrains.
Steve from Chicago. I've been using all terrain KOs since my 93 Ranger, and I've loved them. I've never had a problem with them. They do the greatest for all the round daily driver type stuff. So they do me good in the mud.
You know, I thought the mud terrain or maximum traction tires were really only good for mud, and then I was watching a YouTube video and I saw that it's very good for climbing up on stuff, especially those shelves like there are at Hidden Falls.
Well, yeah, if you got the right line and you got the right air pressure, there's certain amounts of tire, certain amounts of driver.
I guess ATs on my.
Who is this?
WJ Chris, hang on. Let me introduce myself. This is Chris from Tulsa, and I run AT street tires. Basically, they're Bridgestones. Dual. I don't know. Anyway, I run those on my WJ, and I've been through Arkansas's three badge trails on them. And unless it was a sloppy, nasty mess, I made it up just fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've only got a 2-inch boost lift on it too, so.
Yeah, you can't even tell.
Yeah, I know.
I was looking at some of those pictures that you posted, and it was like he's doing a lot out there with that stock WJ, right?
Yeah, it's a WJ.
Yeah. So nothing wrong with that. I mean, we always talk about how they're very capable right off the showroom floor.
Yeah, they're very capable, and I get a lot of, hey, does that thing have lockers in it? Or... What was another question I got one time? Was like,
does it have valves in it?
Does what?
Does it have valves in it?
It's got valves in it, but it doesn't have a valve.
Oh, seat. Too soon, too soon. Yeah, Chris, what size engine is that, Chris?
It's the 4.7.
Yeah, so the 4.7 dropped a valve seat. What was it, this past weekend?
Saturday evening.
Yeah, well, you were out off-road with it too, right?
No, I was roaming the parking lot.
Oh, God. So heavy-duty wheeling, yeah.
Some heavy-duty wheeling. It went just fine, but you go to start it up in the parking lot and kaboosh.
Wow. Not fun.
It's too much load for that engine.
All right. Well, we have a few questions here. Hopefully, all you guys are newsletter subscribers, so you got to see what these questions were ahead of the curve. So let me ask you, and this is another one of those self-serving questions, and it's even doubly so because the podcast app that I've been using no longer allows me to add new podcasts to it. So I have to find me a new podcast app to use to listen to all the podcasts that I listen to, including the Jeep Talk Show. So my question is, how do you listen to the Jeep Talk Show?
With my ears.
John, Central Texas. I use Google Podcasts. Is what I've always used. It's worked well with Android Auto and everything else that I have. Since I have an Android phone, I'm assuming if I had an Apple, I'd probably use Apple Podcasts. But you know, Google Podcasts integrates great with all the stuff that I use. So
yeah, I can second that, Steve from Chicago. It's always been Google for me.
Jim from Dallas. I use the same thing.
This is Bob from Colorado. I use, for the Jeep Talk Show, I use the app, and then everything else I listen to is Google.
Do you find it an advantage with the app, Bob? Is it just to get to the show quickly, or I mean, I'm glad you use the app, but it seems strange that you would use that for the Jeep Talk Show, but Google Podcast or everything else.
I started listening to it on there and just stuck with it.
Well, that makes sense. Don't break what's already working.
This is Loon Lenny from Ohio. I listen on iHeartRadio, but when you posted in the Discord channel that the new episode is out, iHeartRadio takes a couple hours to post that episode, so I'll just go to the app if I want to listen to it right away.
Very good. This
is Tony from Michigan. I usually listen to the show through Spotify, actually, but if I need to download it for any reason, so I'm going deep into the forest or in the trails, I usually use the app to download it. I find that a lot easier to download. Mm-hmm. All just right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good point. That's kind of the way I like it. You never know when you're going to be without cell service and not being able to stream the audio. And we used to mention that occasionally about, you know, become a subscriber to the show, and that way you can have it no matter where you are, as long as you had access to the internet some way, somehow, when it went to download. The app I was using before was Beyond Pod. I guess I still have it. I just I couldn't add a new show to it, so I was looking around for something else. And Beyond Pod, you could actually set that so that it would automatically download the latest three episodes, I believe. So I had quite a bit of content there at my fingertips, so if anything happened to my cell service or didn't pay the bill or something, I still had something to do.
This is Matt in Indiana. I'm using one called Overcast. I've used it for several years on the iPhone and had really good luck with it. But here lately, I've also been downloading it on the Apple podcast app and giving that a try again after several years.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so I was going to ask a follow-up question on this, was what podcast player do you have? But you guys have already thrown that in there. And to maintain that self-serving thing I was talking about, that's the one I started using, was the Google podcast player. And I'm having problems with it, in as much as the app I was using before, Beyond Pod, it would automatically create a queue. So all I had to do is go get in the Jeep, press play, and it would automatically pick up the new episodes of things, all the ones I was subscribed to. Wasn't any thought process that I had to do in that. So I haven't found out how to do that on the Google app yet. Do you guys have to pick everything you listen to using the Google app?
No, mine automatically picks up the latest and just queues it up, ready to go.
Yeah,
that pisses me off.
And downloads it.
Yeah, and downloads it.
Yeah.
So I subscribe to the various podcasts, and I saw a thing on there where you can add it to the queue, but I don't want to add it to the queue. I mean, each episode to the queue. I want it to automatically build the queue and play it. So you guys don't do anything special other than subscribe?
Yep, just subscribe, and it just grabs the next one up and starts playing. Like, it'll go from, like, I have Jeep to this podcast, and then I'll go from there to I think Black Rifle Coffee is another one I subscribe to or whatever. And it'll just start playing that one, or mm-hmm. It'll also start playing with the Trail Chasers. So if they have a new one up, but it really goes for the next one that's available out of my subscribe list.
Well, I'm just doing something wrong then. I mean, it seems like the only time I think about it is when I'm driving to or from the office. So that's a bad time to try to figure out a new app. All right, here's another one. This one should start a fight. I bet you this will start a fight with Bob, because Bob likes overlanding. So tell me, what do you think about overlanding, and is it even considered off-roading?
Absolutely.
You mean camping?
I think it's off-roading. I mean, you know, if you're going off-road, it's off-roading. I think overlanding is great if it's got its places. You know, it's not the first idea I have. Most of the time, it's where's the nearest hotel or cabin or something like that. It's probably the higher on my list. But you know, there's times when you're out there, it's kind of cool hanging out around the campfire in the evenings, and I don't have to worry about trying to get back to the hotel or something like that.
In Colorado.
Colorado, that was great. I think if you're going to be going on an extended trip like that, I think it makes a lot of sense. But it's got to fit what the goal of the trip is, right? But it's not my first choice.
Yeah, so Steve from Chicago. Yeah, it depends what you want to do, where you want to go. I would love to go do a cross country through similar to what they did in Colorado, where you're just going just all the different destinations camping along the way, because it's just a lot of fun. It's just a totally different experience. But then there's times I just go for a day and gonna wheel and not have to want to do all the prep work for a big trip. So there's a time and place.
So my biggest problem with it is a lot of guys going to get themselves in a lot of trouble because they like to put the rooftop tent on it and load out their gear, and they take that center of gravity way up high and they don't get it. That's my biggest concern about the overlanding trend, and these people are going to go on those trails and they're like, well, I've got 37s. I can go where that guy's going with 37. Now with an extra 1,000 pounds, you know, up on top of your Jeep. So I think it's great. It's a great thing to do. I mean, they've been doing it for, you know, ever. It just didn't have rooftop tents attached to it.
Well, not being a fan of the rooftop tents, Jimmy, I agree with you there, but you got to also admit, Overland has driven a lot of aftermarket products for Jeeps.
Yeah.
But I think that's where you got to make the separation, right? Because I don't think of overlanding as having like this massive amount of gear. I think of overlanding as just getting out and going on a long trip and kind of camping along the way. So I think if you separate the gear-based overlanders who've got to have the style, got to have everything else, versus the ones that are taking the minimum to be just comfortable and get the overnight done, both of them are overlanding, but I think the one you're talking about, like, we've got gear-based overlanding, you know, all about shovels and massive propane tanks and scuttles and full kitchens and everything.
This is Larry from St. Louis. So, you know, once upon a time, it was called car camping.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like, I can car camp out of Hope. Yeah. I'm not going to overland out of Hope, though.
This is Tony again from Michigan. I do a lot of what I consider off-roading while camping. So I'll set up a camp and then I'll use that to off-road from. I think in my mind that's different from overlanding. I imagine overlanding more of while you're on the trail, you stop, set up camp for the night. In the morning, you wake up, you pack up, and you continue on to the trail. I think I prefer off-roading while camping. It's a little more, little less risky, in my opinion. You're able to have a base camp where you can have tools or larger tools than you would be able to carry at the trail. So I think camping while off-roading is much better than overlanding.
That kind of seems like the no-brainer of what you do. Hey, I'm taking the Jeep off-road. I'm not going to stay any place. I'm just going to stay along the way, and I'll camp. That way I don't have the expense of a hotel or anything like that, or an Airbnb or whatever. You just have a tent. And I just thought of something. Do you guys think it would be a better idea to carry a collapsible tent instead of having a rooftop tent? I mean, the rooftop tent is certainly cooler.
I'm a big fan. Me and my wife are really wanting to get a small teardrop with a little bit larger tires.
Well, for those older guys,
that seems to be ideal.
For us older guys, 3 a.m. climbing down to have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't have your contacts in, man. That's the last thing I need to do is be feeling around for these little steps.
Well, you just make sure the flaps open on both sides, and are actually both things, pants and tent, and just go, right?
Make sure your windows are up on the Jeep, yeah.
A funnel and a hose right out the side.
Hey, so everyone here has heard of Ultimate Adventure, right?
Yeah.
So is Ultimate Adventure overlanding or off-roading?
Combination.
Why do you have to separate them, would be my question.
I think
they can go hand in hand with that. I think that what separates what we think of as overlanding versus actual overlanding is just the ones that are gear-based overlanders, like I was saying.
This starting to sound like a gender conversation.
And I think the biggest thing that differentiates overlanding from just road trips is the fact that you're going off-road through these destinations that you wouldn't normally go.
I would say that was the minimum for overlanding. You have to be off-road. You may be on-road for parts of it, but I would think the primary purpose would be off-road. It could be flat surfaces, just not paved.
Yep.
So this is Bob from Colorado, and I'll invite people to go camping. Like, we'll take the rigs. It's the same thing I'd take overlanding, air quotes. And we'll go up to the mountains for the weekend or for a night even. And we'll go. We might explore a little bit and stuff. But when I say I go overlanding, I pick a route, and I'm going through Colorado down to Sedona or somewhere, or out to Moab, and I'm picking as much dirt the entire way as I can. And it's as much about the getting there as it is the camping. For me, that's the difference.
Yeah, I'm
trying to like what we did in Colorado, right? Because when we went to Colorado, after we left Amarillo, we were on dirt a lot. We went to Medano Pass and then all the way up Stony and all that, and camped kind of along the way. And it was a really long route, and basically camped when we were running out of daylight at the end of the day. And then up the next day, and you're not camping in the same place again.
Right. The route, not the destination.
So, John, let me ask you this. If somebody, a staunch overlander, told you that's not overlanding, would it have changed the adventure, the fun that you had in doing that?
No, because that's just a label. Right, it's like, I'm not really hung up on that. Like calling it a rock crawler versus this or that, I like off-roading. To me, I kind of equate it to like sometimes heavy metal music, which has the worst fans, right? That's not, they're like sub-genres, and they're very picky about, what that falls into.
Right.
Or whatever. It's like, does it really matter? If you're enjoying it, you're out there, you're having fun, then, so a hardcore overlander can tell me whatever they want to as far as the definition goes.
Well, no.
Exactly.
I mean, but I'm not saying that you would put up, you would be concerned with what they were saying, but if others out there are going, well, I want to be an overlander, I want to fit into that pigeonhole, I think the whole point of this stuff is having fun. Taking your stock Jeep or your highly modified Jeep, or even one that's highly modified, and then trading it in for a new Jeep with a 392. It's whatever makes you enjoy life, right?
Whatever makes you giggle.
Yeah, like a little girl.
Exactly what I was thinking. I like picking at everybody, but I don't really care as long as you're having fun.
Yeah, picking's another choice of life. That's a different type of overlanding for me. Well, very cool, very cool. So we can all agree that overlanding's fine. It's not. What do you think about my theory that I've expressed before, where overlanders are just people that don't want to run the risk of damaging their vehicle, so they don't like actually off-roading anymore. They'd rather overland because it's safer.
I've seen some so-called overlanders take on some pretty gnarly trails, even with rooftop tents. You've watched the Trail Recon videos, mm-hmm. right, with Brad and everything else. He doesn't shy away from pretty technical trails, even when he had his rig fully built out. So, I think it depends on their definition themselves, whatever. But I don't necessarily think overlanders shy away from the really hard stuff. But they do have a goal of making their rig last longer, right? And take it to the end of their route. Because like Bob was saying, a lot of times they have really long routes planned. So they may bypass an obstacle or something like that just because they have a long way to go.
Right. And you mentioned Brad over at Trail Recon. We have an interview coming up with him on episode 697, which is going to be October the 20th.
Look at that, a plug, and I didn't even know it.
That's right.
Yeah, so we see a lot of overlanders, if you will, coming up through the Ozarks and everything, and coming out of Arkansas and Missouri area, that they're primarily in trail for the designation, But they also pick up a fair amount of damage too because of the route, if you will.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really to each their own. What, like I was saying earlier, whatever makes you happy. So don't worry about the labels. Don't worry about what people think of you. Go out there and have fun, just like John did and several other on here that went on that Colorado trip. All right, so here's one that I was thinking about about Wendy having a Jeep Talk Show event there in the great state of California. Everybody keep the laughing to yourself. Do gun laws in other states keep you from wheeling trips to those states?
Very well could. I think California being one of them, I want to do the Rubicon, but the more laws and everything else they've been passing, it's making it harder and harder to even think about going out there. Like, it doesn't seem like it would be, the wheeling would be worth it. I mean, it's kind of like you'd want to, but I mean, if I had the choice then, I'd probably be picking Moab or something like that, that doesn't put me into those kind of quandaries.
But John, if nobody has a gun, you and your family are safe. You shouldn't need a gun, right?
Yeah, those gun-free zones work awesome, don't they?
I mean, I've never had to use a gun for really any reason other than just plinking at targets. But if I'm making a long road trip, it's good to have that protection if you need it. And it really concerns me traveling to a state. Were you not that you have a gun, John? We're not asking that. But were the laws in Colorado an issue?
They weren't an issue. I mean, I don't know what they were necessarily, but I can say they weren't an issue for me.
Colorado's reciprocal.
Good.
I don't know, but
surprising.
It was just my bear mace.
Just got to go through what the rules are, the reciprocity in the different states. That's all. Just know what you're getting into.
Well, yeah, but it just seems like the safe thing to do would be not take any guns because you don't want to go on a wheeling trip and wind up a felon in another state.
Well, absolutely.
So that's the opposite of safe thing to do.
See, when I have to go back to Illinois, I do the same thing. I stop right in St. Louis and drive to the state with everything separated so I can drive there, and I just can't carry in that state.
So I don't know how it's going to work out, but I have heard or seen something on YouTube about a federal carry license, and the Supreme Court is kind of behind this. So do you think that would, if you could carry anywhere in the United States, do you think that would help you make the decision to go to other states that may be a concern? I mean, even if it's not, maybe you just don't want to look up the information and, you know, why risk it? It's just, I'll just stay where I am, where the state that I'm in, because I know what's going on here.
I'd say by and large, I'm not a fan of federal kind of interference in there. I still think each state should have the right to set it up however they want. But for argument's sake, if it was universal, you know, that would make things a lot easier there. But you know, a lot of things would be easier with universal rules. That doesn't mean that they're probably the right thing to do.
No, I understand what you're saying. Let the states do things the way they want to do. But there's some states that don't seem to get it.
And right now we have the opportunity to move out of those states, and fortunately they're all moving here.
Here, Tennessee or Florida. I saw a thing earlier today, and thoughts and prayers go out to Florida for this Hurricane Ian that I think is a Cat 3 now, and they expected to get to a Cat 4. It was something along the lines of all you people that are moving here to Florida from other states, we have a welcome gift or something, indoctrination for you coming up here in the next few days. Get to learn what being in Florida is like.
Florida, man. You gotta be on at least one or two news articles.
Yeah.
Larry got that at least.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so do gun laws in other states keep you from wheeling trips there? Anybody else got any thoughts on this?
My biggest thing, this is Tony again, whenever I travel anywhere, I always want to get out, hike the natural trails, stuff like that. I always want to be able to keep protection for animals that might want to kill me.
Yes.
So I know my particular state CPL is recognized by 39 other states, which is pretty nice. Mm-hmm. So having that, there's only a handful of states I can't go in, and luckily there's states I don't really want to either. But so I guess it does, other than California, up in the northern area of California, other than that, I guess, not really.
It depends on why you're carrying it and what your fear is. I mean, worst case, you take the Bill Clinton approach. Don't ask, don't tell.
Yep. That is one thing I was just not going to say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I carry a shovel everywhere anyways.
Oh, then it got ugly. So, I thought about this. I'm thinking of the way I think. Maybe it's a different way. Maybe you're in a state where you don't have to worry about people carrying weapons because it's against the law, and you feel more comfortable going to places that have similar laws. Maybe you don't like going to Texas because you're concerned that while we're shooting up in the air to signal lane changes that you may be hit.
I think I'd rather take my risk in Texas.
I don't know how you feel like I really feel about that.
You know, it goes beyond gun laws, though, along that same line of thought. You know, I think there's a lot of states where Jeep modifications become illegal when you cross the street.
Right? We should all ask Steve about gun laws. He's up there in Chicago. My niece posted a picture the other week of the new signs on the expressways telling people not to make eye contact with aggressive drivers.
Yeah,
There's been so many.
I think John touched on the biggest one by crossing state lines. But if you talk about state laws and everything, as far as modifications, you know, a Jeep, most Jeeps are nothing but one modification after another.
Right.
Well, it also depends where you go and how they enforce it, okay? Technically, you know, the state I'm in, which I'm not going to say right now, just be recorded. Anyway, my wheels extend past the fenders. I've never had a problem with it. I can tell you a story. I got pulled over in Arizona one time. Trooper pulled me over for going 6 over. He says, you know, you're doing 61 and a 55. And I'm like,
holy crap. What's your point? Right?
And he's like, you're the fifth person from Illinois I pulled over today. Well, I came this close. I'm saying, well, no shit. You're pulling people over for 6 over. I said, you do that in Chicago, you're going to get run off the road. So.
Too much for not saying the state you're from there, right?
He didn't say he was in that state. He just said Chicago.
It depends where you go and who pulls you over, and some cops are real dicks.
Well, I was just thinking,
on a power trip, and it depends where you're at. Like the story Greg was telling when he blew by a trooper in that rat rod, right? It's the luck of the draw, literally, who you're dealing with that day.
But like, if you go to places I've heard, like Pennsylvania, I think they're really strict on whether or not you can have doors on or off. Or you've got states where you may have to put mud flaps on the back of your rig if you have.
That's Utah, right? Utah requires mud flaps, I think.
Well, I got to be honest.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I think that is that's probably foremost on my mind. Like Larry was saying, when we're talking about going to these other states, is whether or not my vehicle will be legal.
You know, it looks like the halo headlights with the red. I wish that they'd crack down the shit out of that.
Yeah.
Red facing front is just confuses it, not me, but you got people at night that it screws with them when you see red coming at you.
People on meth or smoking the wacky tobacco and just makes them real nervous.
Those are illegal everywhere. But they don't, you can't put red forward. It's illegal.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what state you're in.
And I think some states, I think I know you have to have like the covers on the off-road lights.
Right.
On there, yeah. Where some of them you don't. You know, there's all these little nuanced laws that can get you.
Well, they have to have a revenue generation stream. So they got to have all these little things that are different that nobody even in the state knows about.
I got a buddy in Illinois who had an antique vehicle plate on his CJ, and he went wheeling with it. Got pulled over because in the law in Illinois is you can only have the antique plate on when you're at a show displaying the vehicle, right? And because he went off-roading and it was all muddy, they wrote him a ticket for it. It was the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen or heard of.
It was an off-road antique show. What?
Well, I said you didn't sell it right.
It was a mudslide,
but it's just, I mean,
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. and I got the feeling that the cops don't particularly care for. I mean, it's there in case they want to tweak somebody, I guess. But I think for the most part, cops don't want to be messing with these nickel and dime things either.
No, if it's one of those things, if you're a dick to them and you have an attitude, you're going to get written for it. Whereas they're just also using it for fishing to see what else they can find.
Yeah, yeah.
No, like when you pick your fight with your wife, right?
Yeah.
This is going to start.
Like all that stuff they remember from.
Yes.
You know, that you forgot. You know, that's the cop on the side
of
the road.
But they can't remember where they put your tool because you had it laying out on the table for too long.
Yeah, but no way you and I could have put your tool.
Yeah.
Larry's singing it.
We've loosened up Larry. He was very straight-laced when he joined the Zoom meeting long ago.
And now back to Jeeps.
There you go.
Yeah. I think that's the Jeep modifications is right up there with the gun laws. I think when you're going to be doing those long trips, which kind of ties back to that overlanding, right? There's a lot of weird things sometimes you got to look at. Normally I don't care too much when you're going back to New Mexico or Oklahoma or Arkansas or someplace around here. But I know that if I go too far out west and cross that California border, like there's a lot of research before you go that way. Just because there's so many things that are different.
Yeah, now you don't want to get caught in North Carolina with a squat, huh?
Yeah. So do you, there's no reciprocity. There's no rules that say if you're from another state and this is legal in your state, you know, as far as the modifications go, you got a pass in this state for 2 weeks or, you know.
Well, I think I was hearing Bob was talking about the emissions testing on like big rigs and RVs and stuff, where they're putting up checkpoints in California to check your RV for emissions and stuff like that, even if you got out of state tags. So I don't know if that's how extensive that is or whatever, but you know, there's
as time goes on, that will drop down to street vehicles. It's written in there. As time goes on, it'll drop down to street vehicles in California. They'll just be able to pull you over like a traffic stop or a checkpoint, check your emissions. If you're out of compliance, you get ticketed. And
yeah, but everybody's worried about California laws, but prosecutors don't prosecute anything out there anyways. What does it matter?
Oh, no. That's for murder or rape that they don't prosecute.
If you murder
for
somebody, you're good.
Or theft.
If you run drugs through in the back of your pickup, they're not worried about the drugs in the bed of your pickup. They're worried about whether you are 2 parts per million over the emissions regulations.
Yeah, well, Mike's not in the room today, but, you know, Mike lives out in California, and he's talked about some of the, you know, the pull-up stops that they put on the roads just to randomly check everybody's emissions or anything. So if you're on, you're going to get caught.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So instead of doing roadside DUI checks, they're doing roadside emission checks?
You can drive drunk as long as it's a Tesla because it's got that auto drive, right? So I think I think if you have an electric motor under the hood, it's free to get out of any ticket in California pass.
They need to, VW needs to sell that bypass that they did so that whenever you get pulled over for emissions in California, you can just flip a switch.
Now here's the catch. You can't charge that electric motor.
So one thing to go back to with the guns, and everyone was worried about California. If you go west, New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, anywhere, keep in mind that an Indian reservation is sovereign. They're their independent entity. They make their own laws, and some of them are extremely strict with concealed carry and gun laws. So if you go into Arizona, the regulations on the reservation are different than the state land.
It's still governed by the Second Amendment, First Amendment, et cetera, though, isn't it?
No, they're
reservation. Not on tribal land, it's not.
No.
On tribal land, you follow tribal laws.
Yep, and they will get you. If they catch you, they will make you pay.
They'll make an example out of you on tribal land. That's one thing you never want to do is get pulled over going through tribal land.
Ooh. So many jokes, all inappropriate. I'll let everybody make their own.
The events there, I went through a couple of the reses.
Going through Oklahoma, you go through I know one of the turnpikes and stuff on the eastern side of Oklahoma, it seems like you can't really go there without getting on the reservations.
It's like a third of the state.
Yeah.
All right, so Bill ATX, who's in here with us tonight, did something the other day that caused me to spend money. He posted up about the KC rock lights, and so I'm on a rock light hunt. Of course, I've been thinking about this since the night wheeling we did back on the first part of June for this second Jeep Talk Show event. So my question is, under vehicle lighting, rock lights, are they useful?
Yes. Rock lights are easily one of the most important light upgrade you can do to your Jeep for off-roading.
To modern Jeeps, I would say that. I would say that if you have an older Jeep, maybe your headlights should be a higher focus because they're going to be used more often than those old Jeep.
Upgrade those damn dim lights, yeah.
New headlights ain't any better.
Well, if you get the LED ones, are pretty good.
Unless you have new LED, otherwise they're just crappy.
The LEDs, proper LEDs, should be strong enough and have a beam wide enough so that you can signal the International Space Station on flat level ground.
So I haven't had an inkling or inclination to rock lights just because in Illinois there are no places we can go off. The closest place is the Badlands in Indiana, and that closes at 6 o'clock at night. So it's not been
There's other big uses. Like, I mean, I found myself underneath mine a few times, like just in the garage to get some extra light.
Yeah,
so you can see everything underneath there. So if you're doing inspections, you're looking for leaks, you're looking for whatever it is underneath there, those rock lights help a lot with just being able to see underneath your vehicle and all those places. So
is a flashlight.
Well, but it's so much nicer not having to have the flashlight in your mouth while you're trying to look at something, you know, because you need both hands.
And I got a magnetic one that lets you aim it to where you want to look.
Well, but you have to have a metal plate to use that, don't you, Steve?
The frame is fine.
Meant in your head. So I'm talking about the KC Cyclone 2s or V2s, I think that they call it. And you mentioned under hood. Did you guys know they also make a two LED light kit, or one and a two, I believe, for under the hood? So you can actually set up those rock lights under the hood.
That would be good.
I've got that. They're great.
They're not. I don't think they're so bright where they kill your eyes, but they produce a lot of light under the hood. Actually, going back to Brad at Trail Recon, I recently saw a video. I think he was actually using the original Cyclones, and he installed a two light Cylon kit. Blah 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 blah. I want to say Cylon. Back to Battlestar Galactica. Whatever those lights are with KC, he installed that under the hood, and it really, really lit it up. But the bright light guy in me says, "Well, you know, you could put two on the firewall and then two on the inner fender, and and really light that engine bay up."
What's the advantage of those Cyclone V2s? They're so easy to mount anywhere because they've got the round design with the hole in the middle. And when you add with that magnet that you can put on the back of that, mm-hmm. very powerful magnets too. Where you can put them is endless. I saw, again, going back to Brad from Trail Recon, if you have a JL on the back of the hardtop, you have those plastic covers on the hinges. He put two amber chase lights back there and mounted them up, and they were the Cyclone V2. So those, just because they're called rock lights, like you said, you can put them anywhere under the hood, inside.
I saw that, and I liked that one.
Yeah, I've seen people put them in the floorboards because, you know, you don't have a lot of lighting down there. You might drop something down there, you can hit that or whatever and light the floorboard up pretty good. Obviously, maybe you want to use like an amber color so you don't blind yourself. But
this isn't a commercial for them. I'm just interested because I've been doing some research on these things, and I have a couple of them that I'm going to be putting on the Gladiator. But the cool thing is that they have those different lenses, so you can get a clear white lens or a clear lens for the white lights. But you can change it out for an amber. You can change it out for a red. I think there was a blue and a couple other colors. So you can really mix and match. John, was it you that had multiple colors on your on yours?
I will. So I started out with the ambers on the outside just because there's a lot of dust around here,
right.
And that amber light helps cut down on the glare from the dust. But I really want to add some of the white ones in the middle underneath the Jeep. That way you can kind of get a little bit more of a glow, but keep that amber on the outside to kind of help cut down on the glare that you get. So you can mix and match on them, and you can buy the lenses. So if you don't like it, you can kind of fine tune it. The light that you want to see and everything else.
Yeah. And they just pop off and pop on. So I don't even think you have to remove the light. Of course, if you got them mounted with a magnet, it makes it real easy.
Those are expensive.
They are. They're very expensive, but it's KC.
They're also they're very good quality. I can tell you this.
Absolutely. You can get cheap or you can get something that's good. So it really depends. I mean, I never like the saying you get what you pay for, because I do think you can get better deals on things. Just because something costs a lot of money doesn't make it good. But as far as I know, KC highlights have always been a quality product. And I still blame
Bill. You missed the KC sale I was telling you about.
Well, I saw the KC sale that they were doing, but I could tell you, you actually get, using the Jeep Talk Show discount code on Northridge, you actually get a pretty good discount on the KC products.
You do.
10 to 15% off there. Plus, if they're over, $70 for your total order, you get free shipping as well. So
free shipping.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal if you're going to buy KC lights on Northridge. That's where I get mine.
So just, you know, KC also does free shipping. Because I got free shipping on my $66 order.
I told Tony to keep an eye on KC Highlight, just the website, because it's been a while, but they offered cyclones with a free cyclone. One single free cyclone with any purchase.
Oh, that's how they get you.
I had multiple orders of a koozie. I bought koozies, and with every koozie, I got a free cyclone. That's why my YJ is covered in KC Cyclones, and I love those lights to death. I've got them under the hood, rock lights all the way around underneath.
Now, this is on the YJ or the 4xE?
The YJ. The YJ. I've got nothing on the 4xE yet.
Right. I think it was you, John, that you said something about chase lights, that Brad had amber chase lights on his. What is a chase light?
When you're going on a really dusty trail and you got a lot of people behind you, sometimes that dust, like we were in Colorado, we got off, I can't remember what trail it was, I think it was Stony Pass, and there's a whole gravel road section where I think the Jeep in front of me was maybe 4 or 5 car lengths in front of me, and I could barely make it out. There was just so much dust around there. Mm-hmm. And so when you have those amber lights up a little bit higher on the Jeep, then you can see them a lot better, especially in dusty scenarios. So
right.
That's a big use for those chase lights.
Interesting. And I would assume
the chase lights come in bars. It looks like a normal light bar. I've got one on the back of the YJ as well. And it's got white, amber, and then brake. And I've got it wired up to everything works. But you can also set it to strobe the amber, or it's different settings and scenarios you can run with those chase lights. But I definitely have one on the back of the YJ.
Your dog wants to know who the hell you're talking to.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's not the new one. That's one of the pre-existing ones,
that
right?
That was the new one.
Is that Waylon, the new one?
The brand new guy. Yep. And he just smelled, I've got food. I just cooked dinner. Oh, that was Pongo behind you.
Yeah.
This is a new one. He was turning around. And he goes to work with me every day.
Oh, that's neat.
He helps sell Jeeps.
Very, very cool. Is that glass broken? No, the one that you're dipping stuff in. Oh, this is great podcasting, I know. It looks like
it's a Sam Adams little plastic cup.
Oh, okay, good. I was thinking, you know, once you break the glass, you're not supposed to use it. So anyway, the Cyclones, what I'm planning on doing with mine is I was trying to find a real thin LED light that I could put on the sides of the stubby bumper. I got a little area there it's covered with something in front of it, but not so much that it wouldn't allow side lighting. And if you go off road, sometimes you like to be able to see not only in front of you, but to the side of you as well. And I thought when I saw this and I started checking into it, was talking to Bill on Discord, it was like, well, this could be perfect. So I got a couple to put on the Gladiator bumper. And now I'm gonna go full Bill and get all of them for the bottom of the Gladiator. I just think it's a great idea from that one night wheeling trip that we did off-road. It really makes a lot more sense to me than the bright lights that you have for going forward. I mean, it's different for off-road. You need the lights down low so you can see what you're crawling over and your spotter can see. And if you're in an emergency situation, maybe you do need the bright lights forward and reverse and everywhere else. So having a lot of fun getting this stuff and looking forward to finally getting these things installed. They came in later than what I was anticipating. I just got them today. And so I've been really impressed with it. They are expensive, but I've been very impressed with it. And I think that I'm going to, I've been trying to figure out, and maybe you guys know, for as far as placement of these things go, I've never understood why people put a rock light in the center top of the front wheel well, because it doesn't really give you enough light in front of the tire so that you can see the obstacle clearly, or the spotter can see the obstacle clearly. Is that simply just the best place that you can put it, and you just can't get the light where you need it?
That's just for looks. I mean, normally what I do is I'll put them on the bumpers and then on the rocker panels. So like two on each side of the bumper, front and back, and then do on the rockers front and rear, and that gives you, will give you plenty of light. The wheel wells on there is just to kind of light up your shocks and your tires, but it's not going to really get any light down on the ground.
So. Okay, good. I wasn't missing something then, because I saw that and I went, that just doesn't look like it would be very useful. I mean, unless you're replacing a wheel bearing assembly or something.
Yeah. They are great though. Like if you're loading up on a trailer or something like that and it's dark and you got to get under there, crawl under there to put straps on and whatnot. It's really nice to have that light to, you know, when you're working under the vehicle.
So you say under the bumpers, so you don't put them where you could actually catch them on things, right? I mean, they're not on the bottom, like grabbers.
No, you try to get them so that they're not going to, you can get them on the, you know, kind of the tire up parts of the bumper mm-hmm. on there far enough back where you're not going to hit them. The nice thing is if you use the magnetic mounts is you can always relocate them,
right?
You know, just pull it off and, you know, stick it up out of the way on there. But I've never had any issues with hitting the lights doing that.
Was did you have multiple colors on yours when we were out there in Juneville?
So I had the Lux lighting before, I had the RGB lights.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I never did the color or the light shows or anything else. I always just ran them as white. So I was like,
you were holding back. You could have been all disco out there.
Like the side by sides. Yeah. So, yeah. White's fine on there. So, you know, Cyclones are great. Simpler wiring. You don't have to run like four wires to each light. You don't have to deal with a controller and all this other crap.
Oh whatever. Yeah. Cause the RGB nature, you need to have additional control lines, don't you?
Yeah. So it's just simpler. Those Cyclone lights are super easy, and if you want to add color, you got the lenses you can swap out.
So you were saying, I think, on the post that you made about that these Cyclone lights were a lot brighter than the Lux lights. Is that correct?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I noticed it, I think, on John's, even though he had the amber lens on there. So I, like you, I think I bought one, and I just kind of compared it, and I was like, oh, wow, that's quite a bit brighter or whatever. And so, and then I was a little leery about the magnetic mounts of the Lux lighting. I like that they have the magnetic mounts. So, you know, the size of the Cyclones, I'm like, is that magnet really going to hold that giant light on there? But once I got the magnet, those magnets for the Cyclones, it's stout. I mean, it grabs, and you got to fight to get the light off. So after, you know, playing with the hands-on, I have no worries. I went all in and, you know, just bought like the 12 lights and put them all up and down or whatever. But I love it. So I can't wait to get out to Hidden Falls and do some more night wheeling.
Yeah. So when you did the 12 lights, that's a lot of wires, even though it's less than the Lux lights. Did you go into some sort of bus bar or something, some tie-in point? Because that's a lot of lines to try to twist together.
So I built four harnesses. So I kind of split it. So I built kind of a harness for the driver's side and the passenger side, and I use like these little waterproof 2-pin connectors. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I learned from kind of the first time doing it is I just hardwired everything, and then I had a light burn out, and I could like go cut the harness. So now with the waterproof connectors, if a light goes out, I can quickly disconnect it, grab another one, plug it right in, and not have to go, you know, break the wiring apart or all the automotive mm-hmm.
tape or whatever, but basically just built custom harnesses that ran to the one of the aux switches.
So in the harness, did you use split loom or that automotive tape, or did you do anything with it other than tie wrap it?
I used the that automotive
that black stuff that they use. It's kind of like cloth tape,
but the stuff that's actually like kind of shiny, it doesn't, you can't tear it. It's like super.
Yeah. I got some of that cloth tape and I was really amazed at how tough that stuff is, but you can still tear it pretty easy.
Yeah, I was using that, but it didn't, when you start to get mud and debris on it, it just, the cloth just kind of, the mud gets kind of soaks into it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other stuff, you can kind of wipe it.
Well, I got, I think, either 50 feet or 100 feet of a quarter inch split loom that I want to use. So, planning on doing a professional install on mine. I don't have the other lights yet, but I was trying to figure out where to put them.
That stuff is the same stuff you gave me, right, Bill?
Yeah, like you buy it on Amazon and you get like 5 or 6 rolls or something. I'm like, I don't need 5 or 6 rolls. Here you go, John.
I used that when I put on my new rear license plate bracket light or whatever, fired all that up. So
yeah, it's really nice, and it kind of has a nice factory look to it because it blends in with all the other wiring harnesses. Yeah. You don't have all these weird colored wires and stuff running through your engine bay and whatnot. So
now, is it different than just PVC electrical tape?
Yeah, it's kind of like a cloth material. It's basically, it looks exactly like the same tape that's in your Jeep. If you go look in there and you look at that tape that's in there, this is like an exact match. I can post a link in the Discord, anybody's interested, but I mean, it's like a perfect match if you're, mm-hmm. if you're, you know, building harnesses or wiring.
Yeah. So the wiring harness that you may see inside your Jeep engine compartment, it looks a lot like that stuff. It's really nice, but I can understand what you mean as far as getting mud and stuff on it. You probably need something a little more robust, or at least something that will keep the mud and the stuff off of it. And we've mentioned Discord here several times. We have a Discord server that you can get access to by going over to jeeptalkshow.com/contact and scroll there. It's the one place that you need to go to get all these links. And we have a lot of fun in the Discord. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's not as busy. And you never know what you're going to learn there too. And maybe things you don't want to know. All right. Well, it sounds like the under the rock lights or whatever the lights are that you want, whatever you want to call them under the Jeep is a good idea. I'm going to be doing it. I was looking at a Cyclone V2 kit for like $310 that had like, I think, 6 lights. And I was they're like $30.99 a piece. And I thought to myself, well, how much of that is wiring harness? Because I don't care anything about the wiring harness. I'm going to build my own. So I was able to, I think I priced out 6 lights, because with the 2 I have, I was going to get 6 more. I think that'll cover the front, the mid, and the tail. I think it was going to cost me $186. And I think that included a couple of amber lenses, because I was going to put those the first 2 on the end of the stubby bumper. I'm hoping that having them on the end of the stubby bumper is going to give me enough light in front of the tires that not only will I have side lighting, but I'll also have some lighting for the ground there next to the Jeep. Hopefully something that'll help me see if I'm off road. And it's just handy to have up more lighting. I didn't get to talk about the legalities of having those lights on while you're driving. I can't find anything that says it's illegal. I mean, if it was a red color, yes, or a blue, certainly. But even if the amber I had amber on the front, so I could have some interesting fun with people on I-10 while I'm driving in early in the morning with in the dark, so to speak. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up as we're hitting that 1 hour mark. We could talk here for a longer period of time. I want to thank all the Zoom people for joining us. Got several of the old crew that are here and a few new faces. We'd like to invite you to come here every week and join us here on the roundtable episode. We record it every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central Time, and of course, you're invited. So coming up on our next JTS interview show, Mike Hallmark of HellwigProducts.com. So check that out before you hear the interview coming up this Thursday. So as I've mentioned a couple of times here, the newsletter, JeepTalkShow.com/contact, just go over there and look for newsletter. You'll see how you can sign up for the newsletter. And of course, it is just as easy to unsubscribe as it is to subscribe. Oh, and next week we are going to have a guest. We've had a couple of weeks here of just questions amongst the crew, which I've been missing, and I think several of you have been missing as well. And but next week we're going to go back to a guest. That's always fun to have somebody on. You never know who the guest is going to be. And we had an interview with Carrie Porter of Discover 4x4 Adventures not too long ago, and she's going to be joining us next week for a question and answer about what they do there for Discover 4x4 Adventures. So until next week, keep listening, and don't forget, we have a new number for our giveaway. So again, JeepTalkShow.com/contact. Look for our new number because you don't want to call the wrong number for this next entire giveaway.
Podcasting since 2010.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.